Palestinian sources reported clashes in Bethlehem, Ramallah, and Jenin cities and nearby villages. In Taqwa village near Bethlehem, Israeli troops fired tear gas at protesters and nearby orchards. The tear gas caused fire that destroyed local farmers' crops, villagers told local media. At least 50 people were reported injured all over the West Bank and were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation, local sources added. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was a Tuesday, September 29th, 2015, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh, Cliff Verla, and Jim Thompson, and our engineer is Liam Delta. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Nicole Weinstock. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Paul Rowland hosts Wednesday Talk Radio. At 9, on Political Perspectives, we speak with Caroline Fredrickson about her new book, Under the Bus, How Working Women Are Being Run Over. We also hear from musician activist Lori Dameron about What Can I Do? Spaceship Earth, her multimedia environmental concert coming to Portland. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on the Radio Zine, host Eric Tegethoff speaks with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and novelist Hector Tobar about his latest book, Deep Down Dark, the untold stories of 33 men buried in a Chilean mine and the miracle that set them free. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support in our recent fall membership drive. If you missed it, no worries. You can still become a member at kboo.fm. Just click on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
Well, this is Cliff Verla with KBOO News, and I'm speaking with Corey Himrod of the Alaska Wilderness League. Corey, what is your role?
I work in communications here at the League. We have offices. We have satellite offices in the U.S. and we have several offices in Alaska. But I work out of our D.C. office.
As I said, I was reading over this release by the Center for Biological Diversity, released September 28th. It does cover the bill introduced by Representative Huffman called the Stop Arctic Ocean Drilling Act, which is similar to another act that was passed by an Oregon senator in July. Just a couple questions. And one is, was this a surprise by the announcement by the Shell Oil Company?
I think for a lot of people it was. They had been angling to get up to the Arctic for a while, and to have started their exploratory drilling. I think there was an expectation that they would find oil up there, but we didn't know how much. And You know, they have, Shell has qualified its statement saying that, you know, if they didn't find a sufficient amount of oil in their exploratory drilling, that they would kind of put their Alaska operations on ice. So in that regards, you know, it was a possibility, but I don't think it was one that we were expecting. So yeah, when they made the announcement on Monday, it was a little bit of a surprise. Yes.
It was revealed, I'm not sure if I read it in this release, that they spent already $7 billion in 7 years trying to make this project pan out. And it sounds like it may have simply, the expense of may have simply added up. But there certainly was a lot of pressure to prevent any drilling at all from occurring in the Arctic. Wonderful news for everybody that's connected with this whole process that's been going on for so long now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The kind of the public sentiment as connections have been made between Arctic drilling and climate change, and as you know, we continue to get yearly reports of sea ice diminishing and just different climate impacts that are increasing up there. There's several coastal villages along the Alaska coast that are dealing with erosion and are facing the prospect of having to be moved. And so I think as a lot of those stories have become more public, and as the dots have been connected between continuing to rely on fossil fuels and certainly opening up a new frontier in the Arctic would be feeding into that. You wouldn't have production right away, but there would be a lot of pressure to continue to use those fuels once this new frontier is opened. I think the public really seized on that. I think you saw that in Seattle, when all of the kayak activism movement started, and Shell's Polar Pioneer was trying to leave, and there were numerous protests there, and there were a number of Shell events, protests across the country in the middle of the summer that we were a part of, and you saw Greenpeace a part of those, and other organizations, and just really rallying a number of people in support of putting an end to Arctic drilling. And I think you guys saw that right there in Portland when their icebreaker was down for repairs, and there was protesting right in your backyard. So I think there's a lot of satisfaction or public agreement that it's probably time for Shell to come out, and I know a lot of elected officials have said the same thing, that Arctic drilling might not be the best thing to pursue. So you know, and we've seen notes in the news that that Shell's investors are most likely going to feel the same way, that this is just not the course to be taking right now. So yeah, in a lot of ways, I think it was very good news for a lot of people.
It's kind of surprising to, if we can believe this, to actually see a huge corporation seeing the light, as it were. We've just learned, however, that the Alaskan governor was pretty disappointed that they've decided to pull out. And he's now talking about opening up the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge again.
We've certainly seen it in some of the press that's come out, that Governor Walker is interested in pursuing the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and specifically the coastal plain area that's been in controversy for quite a while. I can tell you that President Obama has come out very strongly in support of protecting this place. There is a lot of Alaska Native support among the Gwich'in people for protecting the coastal plain and the Arctic Refuge. So we'll have to see. He has said he's going to speak to Secretary Jewell, but I know Secretary Jewell has expressed her support for the Arctic Refuge as well, and they passed a management plan for the Arctic Refuge earlier this year, where they recommended, when they went so far as to recommend wilderness for that particular piece of public land. So I know President Obama has been calling on Congress to declare it as wilderness, and there is legislation on the House side, I believe, that is looking to declare it as wilderness. So, you know, I know Government Walker has made that call, but you know, I couldn't tell you how far he's going to be able to get with it.
Yeah, there have been several, well, at least two now that I know of, bills that were introduced into both the House and the Senate, the U.S. House and U.S. Senate, hoping to close the Arctic, what do they call it? They call it Arctic Planning Region, I think, from any drilling at all. That applies to the waters, I believe, off the coasts of Alaska. I'm not sure how that applies to land-based oil drilling.
So the bills that you mentioned before, the bill by Representative Huffman from California, and then the Senate bill by Senator Merkley there in Oregon, the Stop Arctic Ocean Drilling Act, they're mirror legislation. They would apply specifically to the ocean. So they wouldn't have any effect on the Arctic Refuge. And so there have been, I couldn't name one off the top of my head right now, but there have been efforts to open the refuge to drilling. And there is also, there's specific legislation that's been introduced in the House it's actually a bipartisan legislation to close the refuge off from drilling and make the refuge's coastal plain wilderness.
Okay, thank you very much. Corey Hemrod with the Alaska Wilderness League. Thank you for your time and your comments.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I also spoke with Marissa Knodel of Friends of the Earth. She had this to say.
My title is Climate Campaigner, and I work to stop fossil fuel development on public lands and waters.
I'm looking at a release put out by the Center for Biological Diversity, of which your group is a signatory. Mm-hmm. And the release is on the announcement that Shell made, I guess it was yesterday?
Yes, about pulling out of their of drilling in the Arctic.
Right.
Yes.
So was this really a surprise?
Well, we knew that there was going to be some sort of announcement because September 28th marked the official end of the drilling season in the Arctic Ocean because there needs to be enough time for the companies to seal the wells and get out of there before the ice starts growing again. So we knew there was going to be some kind of announcement, but the fact that they found so little that they decided to halt leasing for the foreseeable future was a very fantastic surprise.
Is this were these explanations given by Shell, are they really believable? I mean, they've spent $7 billion in 7 years investing in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a number of reasons that influenced their decision to pull out. I mean, there are definitely financial ones. I'm sure they were probably receiving a lot of pressure from investors and shareholders to really evaluate whether or not it was worth continuing to pursue these leases. I think there were other market issues as well with the decline in oil prices. But I think a significant victory needs to be given to the incredible amount of grassroots pressure that was given on Shell and on the federal government for allowing Shell to go and drill there in the first place.
So this brings up another question I had. Could they be simply waiting for the resistance to fade and then push again quietly undercover at a later date?
Well, their official announcement was that they do not plan to return for the foreseeable future. And so their status right now is that their leases in the Chukchi Sea expire in 2020, and they have a lease in the Beaufort Sea as well that expires in 2017. And they've already applied to extend those last year. So our hope is that now that it's clear that, I mean, they didn't find sufficient amounts of oil and gas worth continuing exploration there. And when you add on the incredible environmental and climate concerns about drilling for Arctic oil and gas, that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management decides to not allow them to extend those leases.
This is all very good news. I'm wondering if this pullout by Shell applies to one local small region, or if this covers a much larger area.
The hope is that this is the beginning of keeping Arctic oil and gas in the ground, which is needed for a safe climate future. I mean, in order to stay below what scientists have advised are dangerous levels of global warming, the 2 degrees Celsius by mid-century, Arctic oil and gas is unburnable, and that has to remain in the ground. So our hope is that because Shell, even though there are other companies that hold leases for drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic, Shell was the only one reckless enough to go up there and actually do it. So the fact that they've come up dry, I think, is a really good sign, and I think should be a warning for other